Welcome to the Business Marketing Club podcast for business marketing people who want to get on and stay ahead. In each episode, we'll be offering insight and inspiration on a key current topic, advice on how to climb the career ladder, and top networking tips. My name is Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair of the Business Marketing Club Network. In this episode, we're looking at getting on in business marketing. How should you go about building a great marketing team, recruit it and retain it? And how should you go about getting your next marketing post? I'll be talking to business marketers Rachel Egan, Senior Marketing Officer at Mind, and Nim Haas, the UK Advisory Board Member for Women in Tech, and to representatives of the business marketing recruitment industry, to Jimmy Ingram at VMA Group, David Price and Grace Pryor at TML Partners, and James Harrington at Page Executive to find out. Meanwhile, Carol Briggs, Associate Director at Grant Thornton International, will share some great marketing content and what she's learned from it. Today's podcast is all about teams and the role of business marketing people within them. We'll look at how to build and maintain great teams and how to play a great role within them. My first guest is Rachel Egan, who is Senior Marketing Officer at Mind. Rachel, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
So first of all, tell us a bit about Mind.
So Mind is the leading mental health charity in England and Wales. We are a national organisation, but we also have a network of 130 local Minds across England and Wales. Each of you are individual charities that meet the needs of their particular audiences. At National Mind, we provide advice and support to help anybody experiencing a mental health problem. We campaign to improve services, raise awareness, and promote understanding. And we refuse to give up until everyone experiencing a mental health problem gets support and respect.
What an amazing job you do. Thank you for coming on to the podcast today. We're talking about team building and recruitment. What would you say marketers need to bear in mind when building their ideal B2B marketing team?
I think kind of with any area of marketing, but in particular B2B, it's important to get a range of different people with different skill sets. So you need people who are good on the kind of visual side of things, the graphics, the design side. You need people who can develop good messaging. You need people who can help measure the insights and the performance of everything you're doing in terms of where you're getting your B2B marketing returns, and people who are good at research. I think, you know, one of the, obviously the growing importance we're seeing in marketing of having more consumer research in the B2B area, whereas previously, you know, we saw it a little bit more in the kind of B2C marketing zone. Management is obviously a key part of any marketeer's role. And finally, creativity. And I think for B2B marketing, it's important to consider kind of issues of inclusion and diversity, because if you're a bunch of different businesses, you're also working with a range of different people. And it's important that your own marketing team kind of reflects your audience as well.
Great. So you've covered off skills there, and you've covered off quite rightly diversity. What about sort of looking at this from a kind of softer skill or competence perspective?
So I think creativity is obviously a key part of any marketing role. So the ability to think about how you get your messages across in an interesting and creative way. Obviously, kind of stakeholder management and communication skills are really important. I know, especially in my role, when you're dealing with lots of internal stakeholders and external stakeholders, and you've also got, you might be liaising with suppliers as well, and you might have quite a lot of conflicting deadlines. So making sure that you can communicate well. The ability maybe to manage expectations, I think, is a really important part, certainly a part of my role, which is becoming more and more prominent the more I progress in my marketing career, is that ability to manage expectations on both the kind of external side, so, you know, the businesses and partners that we're working with, but also on the internal side, and making sure that, you know, my team here at Mind understand the importance of B2B marketing, and also understand that, you know, how long it takes us to turn stuff around.
Cool. So that's kind of building the team. Once you've built your team, you need to make sure that team continues to grow and develop. So how should you ensure that? How can you go about that as a marketing leader?
I think it's important to make sure your team are very aware that you're committed, you know, to their training and development. So making it quite explicit, maybe when they join the organization or at the recruitment phase, but also, you know, particularly during that induction process, saying, you know, if you want training in a new area or a new technology kind of arises and you think it's important for your role, making sure that they know they can flag that to you. I also quite like the idea of sort of skill sharing and skill swapping. So when somebody new comes into the team, they might be bringing in a skill or a new sort of know-how or experience that they can share with other team members. And that idea of kind of helping each other out, running like little workshops on how to do different things.
Yeah.
So making sure you're sharing your learning as you go along. I also think in many ways, making sure you continue to challenge your team a bit. So giving them, you know, different projects, different ways of doing things. So they're kind of constantly, you don't want people to feel constantly stretched. That's not really right. That's not brilliant. But also making sure that they're not kind of stagnating in your organization.
Yeah.
You know, you want them to feel like they're still getting ahead and they've been given those sort of opportunities. Yeah.
That's I'm particularly interested in your last point there about actually not wanting to spend kind of too much, you know, all of your day job kind of learning new things and making sure that there is a balance. Where do you think you would draw the line? You know, how much of your marketing day should you be spending learning new stuff?
Oh, I think that's a really good question. I'm not sure if there's a one size fits all answer, to be honest. I think it probably obviously depends. As marketeers, you know, we have a lot of fluctuations sometimes. We can have a lot of deadlines coming really soon. And then, you know, it might be a bit quiet for a few days. So I think it's making sure it fits in around the individual. Right. So some people, you know, might like to have a set day, for example. Like Friday afternoon is my personal development day, for example, whereas other people might think, okay, when I've got a little bit less on, that's when I'm going to use my time to do some training and find out about this new technology or this new marketing strategy. So I think it's important to give people a bit of flexibility around that, but make sure that, you know, it's part of their objectives, that L&D is covered, you know, across their working role.
And what advice can you give for B2B marketers elsewhere who are seeking to build or participate in a great team?
So I think for people who are looking to build a great marketing team, some of the things we've already discussed are really relevant here. So making sure you've got a good range of people with different skill sets across both hard and soft skills, making sure your marketing team is reflective of the audiences that you're trying to reach, gathering you know, enough insight about your audience or having plans to gather that insight if you are a brand new team, and being open to training and new ways of doing things. I think if you're looking to participate or join a great marketing team, you should be looking out for things like creativity, commitment to training, asking questions about obviously things kind of like, you know, what's their company culture like, how do they manage their internal stakeholders, all those kinds of things that will make you feel fulfilled in your job. And also making sure that you've thought about what makes a workplace really good for you and what makes a role a good fit for you. So whether it's, you know, some people are very keen on flexible working hours, for example, whereas others, you know, are very mission driven or financially driven. So having that clear picture and finding a team that really fits for you.
That's great advice on what to do. How about the reverse? What absolutely not under any circumstances should you do?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think one of the patterns that marketeers can fall into, and particularly as people become more senior marketeers, is, well, this is the way we've always done it. So this is the way we're going to do it now.
Yeah.
And kind of being closed off to change and innovation. I think it's really sad when you see marketing teams that are scared to make mistakes. I think for me, you know, a big part of marketing is learning, you know, trying things. Sometimes they don't work, you know, but actually learning what doesn't work in marketing can be just as helpful as learning what does work. So I think making sure that your team feel that it is okay to make mistakes and not creating an atmosphere where that's really frowned upon.
I would say from personal experience, making sure you do have some sort of marketing budget is also useful. You can market on a bit of a shoestring. It does make things harder. So, you know, making sure that there is some marketing budget for you to do what you want to do.
Marvellous. Rachel Egan, Senior Marketing Officer at Mind, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Staying with the business marketing professional's view of team building and recruitment now, my next guest is Nim Haas, who is UK Advisory Board Member for Women in Tech. Nim, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dave. I'm pleasure to be here.
So tell us a bit about Women in Tech.
So Women in Tech was launched a bit more than a year ago. We obviously specialize in trying to advocate and promote more women in technology roles. When I say technology roles, it could be, you know, from HR to account management, implementation, ops, tech, so not necessarily just development and coding roles. We have a bit more than 15,000 members currently worldwide. We've launched nearly close to over 10 country chapters across the world. And we keep on growing. You know, we've got different initiatives. We just had the Global Women in Tech Summit that happened last month, and the Women in Tech Awards as well that happens every year in Portugal.
Wow. And your particular specialism as a marketer, I think I'm right in saying, is in fintech. So if you put your kind of fintech hat on, what would your ideal business marketing team look like?
Having hired teams previously, I always prioritize someone who has knowledge in the sector, I think, is a priority. Passion for the sector, I think, is the second, and someone who's also very driven and ambitious. I think those three skills for me are the most important in hiring a team, because knowledge and passion is obviously one of the main drivers to be able to do the role properly, and skills you can always learn on the run.
And so how would you go about building an ideal business marketing team in fintech?
Considering I'm also consulting for several companies, it's actually advice I've been providing for one of my clients currently, is, you know, where to start off when building a marketing team. I think ideally you need to know what your current marketing requirements are, the different channels you're using or the different channels you want to optimize or build. And then from there, it's like building your strategy. You build your strategy first, what you want to deliver, what you're expecting from performance and results, and then you hire the team to deliver on it. So for example, if your focus is on digital channels, then you have to make sure that you hire a marketer that understands not only the sector, has knowledge in the sector, has also an understanding of the various target verticals, but has skills in digital marketing and so on. It really depends if it's content. It's the same thing. If you have a very high focus on content marketing strategy, then you hire someone actually who understands content outreach and how to build appealing content for your target audience.
And when I'm looking to recruit that new team, thinking back to your kind of three things to look out for, it strikes me that some of those things are actually quite easy to be able to recruit for, like, you know, knowledge. You are kind of either have it or you don't. How do you go about recruiting for passion?
Easy question. I usually always ask what keeps them up at night.
Okay.
You know, what do you think when you get up in the morning? What keeps you up at night, and what would you like to change in the sector? It gives you a pretty good overview of that person's knowledge of the sector as well, what, you know, their expectations or the trends, if they're keeping up with the trends, or what they would like to see change, or various challenges or issues the sector is facing. So it's those typical questions, but I think the two questions would be, I always ask during an interview process, you know, what keeps them up at night and what would they like to see change?
And when you look at the process of recruitment, do you use recruitment agencies to help you?
I've used both in the past. So for example, for PR or communication roles, I've used several recruitment agencies, obviously because they know who's moving around, who wants to leave, who's looking to get poached. Then, you know, depending on budget and also your requirements, they know the right candidate. At the same time, I'm also a big advocate of using my own network and reaching out to people I know. I think it's also good to have references of other candidates that people have worked with. I wouldn't say I use one or the other. It's more of like, you know, the aim is to find the right candidate for the role and someone that will be part of your team and someone that you can trust and delegate and work closely with. So I think both channels are good to recruit the right candidate.
And once you've got that right team on board, how do you ensure that your marketing team continues to grow and develop?
Ah, the big word, development. Okay. So let's put it that way. This is a big debate. I do not select teams, and I would actually advise for other marketers not to select teams if they feel that that candidate is only involved with their own self-development. So there's a difference, I think, about hiring a candidate that has the passion and the knowledge and wants to contribute to the company's growth, and within that they will obviously grow as well, and be supported and learn and grow within the company and skills and position. I try and avoid people who come to an interview and are solely focused on self-development, because that doesn't actually show me a team environment.
So they're not really, I guess, a team player in the way that you're looking for.
So I'm very particular. If someone speaks during an interview and uses more often the word I, if I say, for example, describe what you achieved in your past role, I usually lean more towards people who automatically and naturally says the word we. Mm. My team and I, or we achieved, instead of I did this, I did that. Yeah.
But once they're on board and you've kind of taken the view that you've recruited a team player, how do you go about development then?
I do. Prior teams, I've always asked what their objectives were. So I tend to be very transparent. As a manager, I'm a very flat hierarchy and transparent, but I would be like, okay, let's be honest, no one stays 10, 20 years in the same company. You know, so depending at which level they're at, I'm like, let's go on the principle, you're going to be here for 2 years. And then, you know, someone's going to come and poach you, or you want to go to a bigger company, or you want to go to a smaller company, or whatever that might be. So I try and be a line manager who's very transparent, going like, what is actually your career goal? Where do you want to see yourself in 2 years' time? You know, let it be skills, let it be growth in terms of role, let it be monetary. Do you know, in terms of package, where do you want to be? And actually, then I build individual growth plans. If it's skills, then I'll delegate and allocate particular tasks that will help them build those skills. If it's monetary, I will set various KPIs for them to have bonuses or what they could expect. And obviously the self-development. If it is just a self-development, hopefully it's not, I would try and see, you know, what type of budget we have to support that, or training from HR or various external courses.
And how much is development something that comes from the individual as opposed to something that comes from your observation of the individual?
I'm not a big fan of candidates that just wait for the training to be served on a platter to them. That just shows me that they don't have the interest to learn themselves. I mean, today with the internet, with so many free online courses, with so many webinars, I mean, like overwhelming webinars at the moment, right? Knowledge is out there. You know, there's no excuse for a person not to be knowledgeable or to gain their own knowledge. So I think candidates who maybe sit, or team members who kind of sit going like, oh, I'm not getting the right support, or I'm not getting the right training, or this and that, I think that's just an excuse. I think that if you really want to learn, there's so many, I mean, even like all those, you know, short LinkedIn kind of video courses and so on, you can raise your skills literally in any sector today without paying for a course. So I think it's the willingness, the motivation that person has, and that will actually show me the drive and the ambition that they want to try and achieve on the long run.
So what advice can you give for business marketers elsewhere who are seeking to build or participate in a great team?
Passionate people. I would say knowledge and passion. Knowledge and passion is, if you find someone who's overly passionate about what you do, what you provide, or the type of services or the change that, you know, the company is trying to make, or the sector you work in, that person will live and breathe your company and your sector. So, you know, drive, ambition, that's and skills, as I said, I mean, skills, they can learn the skills on the run. It's not, I mean, how many people, let's be honest, how many people have actually oversold themselves in skills and then still managed to overly perform, or those that have actually oversold themselves and completely messed it up? I mean, you know, you've got two categories, but knowledge is key.
And with your women in tech hat on, is there any kind of particular advice you would give to women who are looking to get on in the business marketing space?
As a woman, so in terms of gender, I wouldn't say gender as a woman, I'd say like diversity. I think it's more of just be yourself. Also, the fact of being from minority backgrounds, or the fact of being, you know, a female, or whatever sex you are, just be proud of who you are, and you know, what counts is how you deliver your performance. And as said, you know, the knowledge and the passion that you have in what you do, in the role that you do in marketing. So I think my advice would just be yourself, and people will love you for that, and they will love you and embrace you for the passion you have, the role and the sector.
That's great advice. Nim Haas, UK Advisory Board Member for Women in Tech. Thanks very much.
No worries. Thanks a lot, Dave, for having me.
To the recruitment sector's view of team building and recruitment in B2B marketing now, my next guest is Jimmy Ingram, who's practice lead at VMA Group. Jimmy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dave.
So first of all, tell us a bit about VMA Group.
Sure. So VMA Group is a specialist in communications, marketing and digital recruitment. It's been established for the last 42 years with a pan-European presence, with offices in London, Amsterdam and Paris.
Cool. I should say, because the recruitment market moves very, very quickly, so we're recording this in mid-June. What trends are you seeing in business marketing recruitment right now in terms of trends in sectors, regions, skill sets and levels?
Sure, it's a great question. We're moving so fast at the moment, and every business in every sector has been impacted and is having to adapt. So there's certainly more similarity than difference in the challenges everyone is facing at the moment across all regions. Although having said that, our European partners are definitely a couple of weeks ahead of us in this crisis, and are probably starting to emerge a bit faster. Sectors that are certainly more buoyant would include technology, consulting and business services. They seem to have been much more prepared to work remotely, and few of our clients in this space have utilised the furlough scheme, which is encouraging to see. In terms of trends, we've seen overall spend significantly reduced amongst our B2B clients, but certainly that they're diverting us towards digital budgets, specifically content, paid media, and digital engagement. So speaking to a couple of our clients, you know, LinkedIn's become a key part of a company's swift to a purely digital strategy. In terms of trends, I think we're seeing the new future for B2B engagements, with obviously digital conferences, webinars becoming the norm, and probably achieving a much wider reach.
Okay, let's put ourselves in the shoes of some different types of marketing profile now. So I'm a marketer who wants to get on, and I want to climb the career ladder. How would you advise that I get my name out there?
Great question. I think for any marketer, building your networks, you know, driving relationships with recruiters, with peers, is really important. So any successful marketer needs to be seen as a strategic thinker and someone who is relevant to their market and wider business. So being a voice of your business it's certainly important, and just kind of raising your profile on various channels will certainly ensure that you're known amongst your community.
So how should I go about that recruitment?
So there's multiple ways to go about it, but certainly hiring from the gut is what I would like to describe as being one of the best approaches to recruiting. So bringing someone in who's going to fit the culture of the team and work collaboratively with their peers is really important. Clearly, they've got to have the right skill set, trying to find the balance and bringing in people who can really add value from a personal perspective and bring in that those skills are really important. Also, finding the balance of skills would be great. There's a big reluctance to do so, but certainly looking at consumer marketers, for example, who want to make the move into B2B, they could add a lot of value. And you know, over time, it would be great if we saw more consumer marketers sort of given the opportunity to move across.
And Jimmy, I wonder if you can tell us what's the general mix of the marketing team that you should be creating?
Sure. So again, dependent on the size of business, but you're obviously going to have a CMO who's generally building that business and developing the strategy. They're going to hire a head of marketing. That person would generally lead the day-to-day management of the team. Then you'd have specialists or small teams, depending on the size, that would include CRM and email marketing, social media, content marketing, insights and events. For tech companies, that would also probably include a product marketing manager. And in some cases, depending on structure, disciplines such as comms and PR could also fall into the marketing mix.
And how long would it take to build a marketing team in the way that you're proposing?
Yeah, so if you were building from scratch a team of that size, I would say you'd want to allow at least 6 months to do it properly, and you'd hire one or two key roles and then go out and hire one or two more additionally at a time. You know, trying to hire a team of that size all in one go would be difficult, and I think you'd have a very disparate culture, whereas you're much better to get the, you know, a senior person drive the recruitment for all of those roles and do it bit by bit. And also, you know, even as a recruiter, you'll see that you find that hiring, once you've hired a couple of good people, they have good networks and they might well be able to attract some of their own peers through their own network to come in, so you won't need to use one or two channels for the whole team.
So that's sort of how to recruit. Are there some things that are absolutely faux pas as well? What are the things I shouldn't do if I'm going about recruitment?
So the most common mistake we see is offering someone after one interview. And I think that sometimes, you know, it's great that you find someone you like that you want to bring on board, but the risk is that person isn't invested into you or the business. And it's most likely having multiple discussions with other companies. So the first bit of advice is, you know, put that person through a process, not necessarily all one way. It's got to be a two-way process and discussion, but make sure that person gets the opportunity to understand the business and meets key stakeholders and really understands your vision and the business's vision. And they'll be a lot more bought in over two or three interviews, maybe only one formal interview and a couple of more casual interviews and discussions. So they really have a good idea of the business they're joining. Because, you know, most people are career driven. They spend a lot of time with the people they work with. And it's important that they're making the right choice. And their choice isn't just based on a job spec.
Jimmy Ingram, Practice Leader, VMA Group. Thanks very much. Staying with the recruitment sector's view of team building and recruitment in business marketing now, my next guests are David Price and Grace Pryor from TML Partners. Welcome both of you to the podcast.
Thanks very much.
Hi, Dave.
So tell us a bit about TML in the first place.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us on. And as a really brief intro to TML, so we are an international executive marketing search firm. We purely specialise in marketing leadership appointments, so primarily across head of, director, CMO level mandates. But we also help out marketing leaders build out their marketing leadership teams across management hires and specific skill sets. Well, we are actually industry agnostic and work across a whole range of host of sectors. And also geographies, I guess kind of from the intro, working internationally as well.
Cool. So looking at business marketing recruitment right now, what trends are you seeing happening across sector, region, skill set and level?
Yes, it's really interesting, obviously, given the current macroeconomic climate that COVID has thrown up in terms of kind of marketing and then also human capital and how firms are fundamentally recruiting as well. From a sector's point of view, naturally, the ones you would expect to be busy are, so looking at technology, consumer technology, industries that are slightly more resilient to short-term fluctuations from an economic point of view. Sectors like defence have longer-term kind of government-led contracts, seem to still be quite resilient and busy from that perspective. But interestingly, we're starting to see some of those more risk-adverse sectors that you'd expect to be in a turtle shell state for a lot longer, starting to come to the fore and actually think about hiring, which is quite interesting. So going into kind of pre-COVID, very busy in the worlds of built environment, real estate, accountancy, legal. Those markets are still actually or looking like they're going to be quite busy into the second half of the year, which is interesting. From a region's perspective, again, pre-COVID, we were absolutely seeing the advent of firms moving away from London and looking towards much more sustainable talent pools in centres with kind of, you know, really strong, I guess, kind of university and graduate, kind of backgrounds and campuses, as well as kind of potentially slightly more creative communities, which is probably something we can come on to a bit later. But cities like Bristol, Birmingham, Manchester, Leeds, Newcastle, all, I guess, kind of Reading actually is another good example, looking at some of the big four firms, where we've seen real investment in marketing ecosystems.
Okay, and what about skill sets and levels?
Yeah, so from a skill set perspective, I think, again, there's definitely a reflection of what's coming out of the current climate. So given the fact that, you know, we are massively sort of changing our perspectives, also becoming sort of much more global, people are starting to think about the picture. And that lends itself sort of well to kind of business focused, firm wide sort of marketing campaigns rather than something related to a specific sector line or a specific product or service that people are marketing. With that in mind, there is definitely a movement to looking at sort of more generalist marketers. So that's basically people that can adopt that kind of business partner approach. And then absolutely sort of choose the right sort of channels to use, but then lean on that hub and spoke model. So actually leaner, but specific specialists that they can then speak to in terms of rolling out those campaigns. Given again the current climate, we're obviously sort of seeing a big push towards digital and social, but rather than there being many more digital specialists, I think we're definitely seeing wider team members actually being upskilled to embed digital across all departments and all marketers.
If we kind of start putting ourselves in the shoes of I guess different profile types right now, so if I'm a marketer who's looking for a job right now, how should I be getting my name out there?
I think this is all about your personal brand. So definitely sort of thinking about who you are and what you want to be known for. But if you think at the moment it's a buyer's market, it's absolutely about having a real sort of targeted approach. So rather than sort of thinking about personally getting yourself out there on LinkedIn and assuming that sort of everyone's listening and everyone's hearing you from a kind of content perspective, actually think really proactively. So where do you want to be in 6 months' time, a year's time, 5 years' time? What are your career aspirations? What are the brands that you want to work with? Who do you want to work with for? And then absolutely think about a personalised approach into those companies. So I think as the climate is changing so quickly and companies have to be much more agile and briefs often change as the recruitment goes on, it's much more about being open to those introductory coffees, speculative conversations, because regardless of what someone's looking for now, even in sort of 1, 2, 3 months' time, actually that could sort of change slightly.
Okay, so let's put ourselves the other side of the desk. I'm a B2B marketing leader who's looking to build my team. How should I go about it?
Well, as someone that has helped you build teams previously in the past, Dave, then hopefully you've come to the right place to answer that question.
I'm still asking the question.
Well, no, obviously it goes without saying that it's all dependent on the sector, the audience, the product, the service. And it is, I guess, kind of quite a difficult question to answer with a broad perspective. So I think kind of one of the key things to factor at the moment is thinking about, you know, what's resonating in the market, thinking about tonality, advice, expertise, I guess kind of the way that clients are, you know, engaging with a service or a product, which naturally lends itself more towards ABM scaled, ABM methodologies. And I think actually therefore focusing again about on elements such as that hub and spoke model that kind of Grace spoke about is I think food for thought in terms of how you're thinking about kind of structuring and building your go-to-market function. Brand is equally now important, probably more so than it's ever been, certainly thinking about purpose and positioning. I think if you're a business leader or a marketing leader, starting from the top down is critical. Getting that kind of right leader is really, really key to building the right infrastructure. You know, thinking about someone who's going to bring motivation, is empathetic, is driven, is humble. So it's classic level 5 leadership traits. But then also as you're kind of scaling that function, getting the right people on the bus, I think we see what we're seeing is that flexibility across different channels, fluidity across kind of how you can structure your time is really, really important. So I think if you're thinking about kind of, you know, I guess kind of building a team, just getting the right people on board that can showcase that differentiated value proposition across a range of channels and skill sets is what's going to add the most value in the coming 12 to 18 months.
And what about from a time period perspective? How long typically can it take to build up the team in the way that you describe?
So I think, first of all, it's a bit about working backwards. So what are you actually building for? You know, what's your business strategy? Who's the audience? What are the tactics? What are the deliverables? And then sort of work backwards from that.
Okay. So it was an impossible question to ask. So I think you gave a very good answer there. So, okay, let's look at actually the process of recruiting now. So how should I go? Obviously, you're going to answer, well, I should be picking up the phone to you guys. But once I pick the phone up to you guys, what are the steps I should take to recruit?
Yeah, so I think in the key market, I think thinking about your employer brand is really critical. And from that point of view, less is more. Again, if you're thinking about what we're talking about from a candidate perspective, it's what you want to be known for and the types of people you want to be having those conversations with. I think commitment is really key. So if you're going to recruit the process directly, you're not committing spend to a recruitment campaign. You've got to invest the time in that and follow through. Otherwise, if you just kind of post an ad on LinkedIn or any job site and then leave it for 2 weeks and see what you get and you don't really follow up, actually you're potentially doing more damage to your employer brand than good. And also you just end up kind of back to square one when you end up then going out and instructing an agency. So I think the key is just to really commit to a recruitment campaign, you know, to focus on your strategy and then really kind of try and execute that and understand it. Leverage your network, use the power of borrowed authority. You'll be amazed, you know, how many appointments come through referrals and referral networks, but also then the understanding that kind of having the right recruitment partner is really, really key, whether that's external, whether it's internal, to help manage that process impartially and just make sure that in an age, and certainly now more than ever, where diversity, inclusion, unconscious bias are all really critical parts of any recruitment process, you've got a partner that's really going to guide you through that and get you the best possible people for your roles and mandates.
Okay, let's ask the reverse of that then. Those are the things I should do. What are the things that absolutely not under any circumstances to do? What should I avoid?
So I think, first of all, if you think about actually what is going to attract talent, so as I think David covered, it's less now about the product or the service that you're selling, and actually what do you stand for? So, you know, what's your company message? What's the purpose? What is your diversity and inclusion strategy? What's the culture like? What does your brand stand for? So actually, just as we've all been saying, that it's less about the hard sell at the moment, it's absolutely the same with recruitment. It's not about sort of selling your firm, but actually the wider, bigger picture and what it stands for. Going back to, again, the point on sort of quality over quantity, it's absolutely about not diluting the message in the market. So really sort of get your story straight, as well as finding the right partners. What is the story? Why are you recruiting? Where is your business at? What position is it in? And why are these hires critical to the company? And then absolutely come up with a really sort of strong message to then talk to candidates about.
David Price and Grace Pryor from TML Partners, thank you very much. My next guest is James Harrington, who is Associate Partner at Page Executive. James, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
So tell us a bit about Page Executive.
So Page Executive is the executive search brand of Page Group. We recently ranked fourth for assignments up to 200K in multi-practice firms. We've got around about 35 consultants in the UK and 150 globally. We're the extension to Michael Page Marketing.
What trends are you seeing in B2B marketing recruitment then, James?
Well, Dave, it's a bit of a mixed bag at the moment. Obviously, pre-COVID, we were seeing some good increases within the financial services sector, and also the technology marketplace. There's some increases in recruitment volume there. Post-COVID, obviously, quite a lot of markets have taken a real hit. Property market, business services, two markets that are on the decrease, and the industrial manufacturing markets are finding it tough. Technology still seems to be holding in there, but we're hopeful in the next couple of months we'll start coming out of the dip and see an increase across all sectors.
And would you say there are any trends you're seeing in skill set or in level?
Yeah, from a skill set perspective, insight and data analytics is a particular area where there's been a real increase in volume of vacancies over the last kind of 6-12 months. Over the last couple of years, digital marketing has obviously been on the real increase, and teams have diversified from generalists expanding their digital capabilities to real specialists going into specialist positions across that digital landscape.
For those people who are looking to get on and climb the career ladder or perhaps find their next role, how should they get their name out there?
Yeah, it's a great point. My belief is it's a real focus on your personal brand. Much like any good marketeer needs to be able to improve the organization's brand perception in the market, I think any good candidate needs to have a real focus how they represent themselves across channels. So anything you can do to increase comments within your industry, writing articles, or videos that get your name in the wider press, I think are excellent opportunities for you to increase your profile in the marketplace.
So that's for people who are looking to get their next job. How about on the other side of the desk? So I'm a B2B marketer and I'm looking to build my team. How should I go about it?
It's about understanding what the organization's objectives is, layering your marketing strategy on top of that, and then really understanding what your needs and wants are from a customer perspective, because ultimately that allows you then to build a team in and around what those objectives and needs and wants are, and then you can be very specialist in how you then go about your marketing activity to cater for those needs.
And how long does that take? I mean, I always have this kind of fictional world where I think that I can do things tomorrow. You know, how quickly can I build up a good team right now?
Well, you can always luck out, Dave, and manage to fill the role in a kind of 1 week time period. But I think, as we all know, that's not often the case. I think if you were to look in at filling the role directly, you're looking at a time period of 4 to 12 weeks, dependent upon the level of the hire. Obviously, if that direct hiring process doesn't come to fruition, you then may need to go to broader markets, broader channels, and in which case, then you're looking at a longer time period. My recommendation for all clients is to try and use a multi-channel perspective, where perhaps you're looking at direct methods in combination with an agency partner.
Well, that leads neatly on to the kind of next question, which is, well, how should I go about recruitment? And I realize here I'm risking the answer. Well, you should hire Page Executive straight away. Well, let's take that as a given. And so what else should I be doing to recruit?
Well, my recommendation is using an agency partner, putting your trust into that person to really go out to marketplace and be an extension of your organization and brand in the marketplace, and use that in conjunction with any direct sourcing. Because ultimately what you want is a great comparator between who the candidates are that are coming to you directly from your internal advert through your own network, but also in conjunction with your agency partner, who will no doubt have a network that you guys probably won't have access to. So in that sense, you want that person to be your eyes and ears out in the marketplace and doing all the hard graft for you.
And are the things I should absolutely not be doing when I'm looking to recruit?
Recruitment is always a two-way process, Dave. And my recommendation is for whoever's conducting the interviews to go into that process really trying to sell the organization the benefits of working for that business, the culture and the people, because ultimately the candidate needs to buy into your organization, but more importantly, you as an individual and as a person. You need to come across as an aspirational leader, someone that this person will no doubt want to work for.
Great answer. James Harrington, Associate Partner at Page Executive. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
To something different, I'm joined now by Associate Director of Marketing and Insights at Grant Thornton International, Carol Briggs, to look at marketing content. Carol, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dave. Great to be on it today.
So tell us, first of all, a bit about Grant Thornton.
So Grant Thornton is a network of assurance, tax and advisory firms made up from 56,000 people in over 140 countries around the world. And critically, we're here to help clients realise their ambitions. Now, Grant Thornton International, it's the umbrella organisation that works with that network of firms. So in the centre, we're responsible to be guardians of the brand. We shape global initiatives with marketing and BD leaders around the world. And we help by putting in place some global enablers at the centre. So in that marketing and insight role, this has included really looking at what is our global content programme. We run a research programme that draws on insights from over 10,000 businesses from around the world. So that is really rich along in terms of driving our content approach for the network.
Cool. And let's start, we're going to talk about content, but let's start with some context. So perhaps you can tell us a little bit about your career journey.
Yeah, so I mean, I suppose my career journey really started in a number of different roles, but probably the most formative early experience was working at PA Consulting Group, where I had, you know, a good solid experience going through from exec through to manager through to kind of a senior manager there. But really what struck me in the I think my first day at PA, I sat in a room where I had to read an article which was around punctuation, and I had to learn about the way in which you structure an argument. So it was formative time learning the basics of B2B marketing, but also doing that very much through a lens of the importance of structuring your argument and being really clear about your thinking, which, you know, has seen me through to this day from a content perspective.
We should drop into the conversation Barbara Minto at this point.
Yes, I think we can't do anything without recognizing her kind of pyramid principle, can we, Dave? And you know, many of us will look at what McKinsey do in the content space, and really that technique forces people to kind of extract what might be in their minds, and they may not even know that they've got that insight there, but kind of critically enables that to be shaped so that your key idea is kind of crystal clear. I think my experience of that was also it formed a kind of common language to talk about ideas and insights. So, you know, you could constructively challenge partners, advisors, in quite healthy debate and dialogue without you necessarily criticizing people's ideas, just trying to explore and understand that. So that's really stayed with me. I think probably another element that came from those formative years is the real importance through that insight of understanding your audience. You know, it's something that we hear a lot in marketing, and it's, you know, marketing 101. But recognizing really the different roles, where people are in their buying cycle, and how you bring that to life. You know, what's right for a CEO won't be the same as what's right for a CFO, and certainly more recently we've been looking at our global content program and did quite a lot of work really just trying to understand the different mindsets and what does that mean for our content approach.
And do you see other organisations tapping into that kind of same thing, you know, the tapping into client issues and insight?
Yeah, I mean, I think the consultancies are often do this particularly well. So, you know, there's people like Bain, I think, do a great job in this insight. You know, Roland Berger, I think, is always an interesting one. You know, maybe one of the less recognized consultancies, but they do some great thought leadership and insights. And lastly, I think one of the things that's always been really important for me is the importance of industry. So actually, when I first started at Grant Thornton International, I was principally supporting their industry marketing programs, and then my role has expanded from that time. But Accenture, I think, it is great to watch in that space in terms of their alignment of their marketing programs really to that insight and the way that they use digital channels to bring that to life. You see a lot in their consumer space, which is really interesting to follow.
So there's a lot of organizations tapping into these issues. With what result?
Well, I think there is a piece about they're really trying to kind of engage the mindset of their buyer and what it is that their brand offers, and using stories to connect that across. I mean, I find the inspiration often it comes most naturally from your own organization, but as you know, a slightly more tangential one was I was at an event where they had someone talking from the Guinness Book of Records. Now you might say, what has that to do with professional services marketing? But that was an example where they had started off in more traditional physical publishing,
right?
The Guinness World Records, but really had to think about what was the essence of that you know, idea, and how could they move that into a digital world. And I found that kind of fascinating to look at, but I think we're finding that really the case across B2B and professional services kind of marketing more widely, that real ability to understand your brand, what that is offering, and then creatively bring that to life. And that for me is really founded on that basis of understanding your audience.
Can you do this sort of thing systematically?
I think there are definitely different marketing organisations that put structure around this. The one that I've been most close to is IBM. A couple of years ago, we had an opportunity where a number of the IBM leaders came in, workshopped, and talked really about their marketing process, and that they have a structure of where they take it through from the buyer to developing propositions to how that then flows through into their marketing activation. But you see also there this piece of aligning process with the brand idea. So one of the things that they do through that structure is enable all the different activity to align to a big brand idea. So you probably saw that started with things like the smart, moving on to things like cognitive thinking, but that flows through not just in their kind of marketing, but in their capabilities and services. So I think IBM is really interesting to watch there.
And then, given all of that context, tell us about what content has inspired you.
Yeah, so I mean, I think I'm also inspired working internationally all the time by marketers in my own network. You know, it's fascinating to see how people take something at its basis and then apply it in slightly different ways around the world because they're adapting it to that local context. So in particular, a couple that jump out at me, our Greek firm is always fantastic at not only bringing the rational side of what they do to life, but also bringing that sort of sense of heart and creativity. So they've been doing over the last couple of years some work with Eurobank on growth awards. And one of the things that was really compelling was they did this amazing kind of video really showing the award itself being crafted and sculpted. You know, very impactful storytelling, high visual piece of video. But they complemented that with the rigor that you would expect in an awards event, of being really clear about how did that align to their core market focus, how could they work with the Eurobank, how could they kind of approach and engage their clients. So it's just a really fantastic example of you don't have to have one, both work together, but it is important to kind of have that heart and mind in what you do. So the Greek firm inspires me every day. Another one from our kind of network, our US firm have very much a kind of focus on a challenger position around being the status go. And when they launched much of that to the external market, they had some kind of great videos again of, they're really clear about the different experience that you received from Grant Thornton. Had some great videos of, you know, being in a bar and, you know, the non-Grant Thornton experience and not receiving the drink you ordered and just not being listened to. So that was, you know, great sort of just fun storytelling, but ultimately from that clear sense of they knew their proposition about this different experience that you could expect. And the last thing I think then, you know, again, in the current climate we're in, is that need for agility. You know, we're all, they've had to kind of pivot. They've had to kind of say, what does that core idea of a different customer experience mean in the world that we're in at the moment? And how can they apply that to their clients now? So lots of inspiration from my network, but beyond as well.
Carol Briggs of Grant Thornton International, thank you very much.
And that's all. That's it for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Rachel Egan, Nim Haas, Jimmy Ingram, David Price, Grace Pryor, James Harrington, and Carol Briggs. Please do let us know what you thought of today's podcast. Give us a rating or a review, or drop us a line at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've got something interesting, practical, and visionary to share with our listeners, why not volunteer to be a guest on a future podcast? But no pitches, presentations, or promos, please. We're interested in your thinking and your practical examples. If you've enjoyed the podcast, why not look out in your area for Business Marketing Club mentoring, thought leadership, and events for the business marketing community? In fact, what's stopping you from doing that as soon as you switched off this podcast? I hope to see you again. I'm Dave Stevens. Thanks for listening.